Thank you very much. I'd like to thank PI for the invitation, Philippe, and in particular Laurent, for inviting me to be here today. I would like to...
Please pardon the interruption. I'll need you to turn your mic on, please. Yeah. Thank you.
Let me start again. Thanks, PI, for the invitation, and Laurent, Philippe, for the kind invitation. I think we have to put the power on, otherwise this is going to happen again. I'd like to talk about the information loss problem in the black hole information loss problem in the context of quantum gravity. I like to revisit the question with an emphasis on discreteness of quantum geometry, or the expected discreteness of geometry in certain approaches to quantum gravity. I think the things I would like to say today are general enough to be relevant for different approaches, but the examples I will present will be formulated in the context of loop quantum gravity, which is the formulation I am most familiar with. Okay, so let me quickly go through an introduction to the framework of the discussion. So we are talking about black holes in quantum gravity. So black holes are very special already at the classical level. Stationary black holes are uniquely determined by just a handful of parameters, their mass, the angular momentum, and charge. And they behave like thermodynamical systems in many respects. In particular, Einstein's equations, together with some assumptions about energy conditions, imply the following laws, which are in strict correspondence with laws of thermodynamics. The zeroth law that states that the surface gravity of a stationary black hole is constant all around the horizon. The surface gravity will be related to the temperature as soon as we turn on H-bar effects, quantum effects. Small perturbations of a stationary black hole are described by this balance equation, which is referred to as the first law, that tell us that the changes of the mass of the system is related to work terms, just as in thermodynamics, plus this entropy term, in which the change of the area of the black hole appears multiplied by, again, the surface gravity, which is the analog of the temperature in this first law. And then the second law that says that the area of the black hole can only increase in any of these processes, classical processes that satisfy the weak energy condition. And this is just an implication of famous Hawking area law. We have also the third law that says that extremal black holes are unphysical. So all these classical laws are analog to laws of thermodynamics. This analogy becomes a fact with the discovery of Hawking radiation. So Hawking showed that if we consider the background space-time corresponding to gravitational collapse, namely we have some matter that forms a black hole and the black hole becomes stationary at late times, he showed that if one puts a test field in a vacuum state in the past or in scry minus, then this test field will scatter through this background geometry, and observers at future null infinity will see particles, an afterglow of particles coming, in particular that the state of the system here would look thermal for observers which are sufficiently late in this region here, with a temperature which is given by the Hawking temperature of the black hole, which is proportional to the surface gravity. So black holes do have a temperature. The stationary black holes can be associated with the temperature. The temperature is indeed proportional to the surface gravity. So reinterpreting now the first law in thermodynamical terms, we can infer that the black hole should have thermodynamical entropy, which is given by 1/4 of its area in Planck units. So this leads to a series of questions for quantum gravity. We have arrived to this point by doing semi-classical by semi-classical methods. We consider the test field and propagating on this background. So this black hole radiates. So we expect. Well, the first question is: can we give a statistical mechanical account for this entropy from first principles in a theory of quantum gravity, in terms of a description of this entropy from microstates? That's probably the question about which we have learned the most, and it's perhaps because it's perhaps the simplest question. A harder question is: can we describe, so black holes radiate, therefore they should evaporate? So can we describe this dynamical process in terms of quantum gravity? A quantum gravity theory is absolutely necessary. We can get away with semi-classical methods, maybe, when the black hole is large and the temperature is small, and this dynamical evaporation is very, very slow. But we know that eventually the black hole will shrink, the curvature close to the horizon becomes Planckian, and a full-fledged theory of quantum gravity will be necessary. I'm sorry? Yeah, that's true. So that's yeah. Semi-classical methods are not very helpful for describing what happens here, also inside the black hole. I agree. So, and what happens inside here, the black hole, is relevant for describing also this final. So this is certainly the hard problem, and it is hard because the theories, the approaches to quantum gravity we have are this kind of questions are hard to analyze in the present stage of the formulation. And one can argue, and there is this third question, which is the one I want to discuss in the seminar, which is: what is the fate of unitarity or the information loss paradox? And one can certainly argue that in order to answer this question, one needs to know, in order to give a definite answer to this question, question two is crucial. But I would like to argue that there are some hints already that point to a possible resolution of question number three, or that at least provide a new scenario for stating this question and trying to answer it eventually by better understanding question two. And the ingredient is already the hint that points to this scenario. It's already inside the way in which we answer question number one. So question number one, so the key is that in the kind of approaches to quantum gravity that I have in mind, smooth geometry is expected to emerge from fundamentally discrete excitations by means of some form of coarse graining. I go more into details to this. In the case of loop quantum gravity, one knows that one quantum states of the geometry of space are given by these polymer-like excitations, which have a very clear geometric interpretation at the Planckian level. And one expects that smooth geometry should be reconstructed in terms of this underlined discrete structures. Every time I touch the computer, I get an electric shock. So maybe I should remove my shoes or something. So the idea or the expectation in loop quantum gravity is that the smooth geometry arises from a process of coarse graining, namely observers that have a finite resolution are unable to distinguish different underlying microstates, which differ by details, Planckian details, which are beyond the resolution of this observer. So the notion of smooth or flat spacetime is expected to contain implicitly a great degeneracy. So different microstates will be judged to be to represent the same coarse grain flat geometry by this low energy observers. These observers that come with a scale, a resolution when analyzing the geometry. Yes. It depends. Go ahead. Yeah, that's the idea that there would be that. That's one of the points that I like to stress. I think that there are that there is a possibility that there are excitations, namely that what we can encode that we have excitations that do not carry any energy. Exactly. So if we have different states, if we have different states which both correspond to the same notion of flat spacetime. Flat spacetime, by definition, is a state of zero energy. Or so if we mean by energy the something that curves the spacetime, so these different observers, different states, would correspond to the same flat geometry for this family of observers. Observers will agree that these two states have the same energy.
The assumption is that flat space-time has zero energy.
Yeah, but there's also the assumption that all these states you're talking about are going to be eigenvalue of the same energy. It could be, you're talking the expectation value of the energy is zero. So when you say you have no energy, it's they might not be eigenstate of the energy.
Right, but if the energy is coming from below, it's zero.
Or that the energy is is so small that that you can have excitations with arbitrarily small energy, if you want.
Arbitrarily small is zero.
And perhaps zero energy excitations. I will get to possible examples of how one can get. But this is the point. I mean, this is one of the central points of all this. So this idea of considering equivalent different states, different weak states, from the point of view of low energy coarse grain observers is implicit in the way we compute black hole entropy in loop quantum gravity. So in loop quantum gravity, we consider black hole entropy arises as the logarithm of all of the number of microstates, which, from the point of view of our low energy observers, correspond to the same horizon geometry. Okay. So, in that case, that's exactly the idea that leads to the microcanonical entropy of black holes. So there are many, many different microstates, which are associated to a given microscopic area and a coarse graining scale, of course. And the thing is, like in thermodynamical systems, that the entropy, in fact, does not depend on this, at least the leading contribution to the entropy does not depend on the coarse graining scale. And one finds, in fact, agreement with Bekenstein-Hawking law plus corrections that depend on details of the theory. In particular, here one finds the Mirzi parameter. Okay, so this is how we understand question number one, and so I am claiming that this ingredient that goes into answering question number one is important, is relevant also for answering question number three, namely the fate of unitarity in the context of black holes, black hole evaporation. So what is the information loss paradox? As in two words, as stated by Hawking in 76, So he considers the Penrose diagram of an evaporating black hole. So the causal structure, the global causal structure, is assumed to be like the one I represent in this picture. So in two words, the problem is that I can have instance of time represented by these Cauchy surfaces here, this sigma and this future Cauchy surface here. And as long as these Cauchy surfaces are in regions where curvature is low, then I would expect that a standard unitary evolution from this Cauchy surface to this one. But certainly, I cannot make sense of a unitary evolution from this sigma to sigma prime here, for the simple reason that the domain of dependence of sigma prime is not the whole of the spacetime because it is the black hole. And so one cannot have a unitary evolution from here to here. Some information falls into the black hole, and the singularity in this causal structure is represented as a boundary to the future inside of all of inside observers, observers that cross the horizon. And so the information that falls here, it's basically lost. So in other words, I can start here with a pure state, the pure state of a test field, or the pure state of everything that ends, that produces the black hole that eventually evaporates. And then I would expect, according to this causal structure, to end up with a state here that is not pure, in particular, a state that contains Hawking radiation and whose correlations with the partners that fell into the black hole are not recovered. So Hawking used this to argue that in quantum gravity, one should abandon the unitarity assumption and talk more rather about not an S matrix, but a super scattering matrix that evolves density matrices into density matrices more than pure states into pure states. So the question is, what is the status of this unitarity in quantum gravity? And so this is a debate that is very old, has about 40 years, it's about my age, and probably it's gonna last longer, as long as we don't better understand what happens near the singularity. There are different proposals for scenarios. One of them is, for instance, that okay, something happens inside the information that falls into the singularity is not. So we expect the singularity not to be a boundary of the space-time. We expect the previous causal structure to be modified once we understand the quantum dynamics close to the singularity. One possibility is the one of a baby universe, in which what falls into the black hole just continues into something that is causally disconnected from here. So this possibility is logically there. I think it's a very reasonable possibility. I will argue for a scenario that does not contain baby universes, but just because I want to show that there is a possibility, there is a scenario which to me looks reasonable. There is some evidence from simple models in quantum gravity that that something that does not contain a baby universe can be the option. But I don't think I can rule out this possibility, and I consider this possibility logically acceptable. Here? Well, this is sort of the R equals zero axis after black hole has evaporated. Another possibility is that the black hole shrinks, but when we reach Planckian size, then some quantum gravity effect stops the evaporation, and there is a remnant behind, and that remnant contains all of the information that has to do with the history that led to the black hole formation. So the Hawking radiation here remains correlated with the degrees of freedoms inside the remnant. There are one possibility is that the remnant lives forever with this internal degrees of freedoms correlated with the Hawking radiation. Another possibility is that the remnant slowly leaks the information to infinity. In both cases, one can argue that if the remnant slowly evaporates, it has to evaporate very slowly, and one argues for a long lifetime for remnant in terms of energy conservation. The reason is that if one trusts the semi-classical picture, then there is only a mass of the order of Planck mass left to evacuate this information. And if one thinks of ways in which this information can come out with so little energy, in terms of standard quantum field theory type of excitations, then one reaches the conclusion that it has to last for a very, very long time, for a time that is of the order of m to the power fourth in the initial mass of the black hole to the fourth power in Planck units. And so a very long lasting remnant has been argued to be a problem because these remnants have a lot of internal degrees of freedoms. And if one views them, if one describes them in terms of an effective field theory, then there will be a huge probability of pair creation of these things. And this has been argued to be a problem. But of course, I'm not going to go very much into the details. There are reasons to. I mean, I don't think this is this has this rigorous status. This kind of arguments. It's arguable whether one can consider these things as particles in effective field theory. I don't think that there is a clear-cut way to rule this possibility out. So this is another proposal, another possible scenario. A famous proposal that has been around for quite some time is that of is the one by these people that comes in different forms, but this boils down essentially to the same type of ideas, and it is like it is that the information. Sorry, that the view is that the Hawking radiation emitted during the semi-classical phase, when the black hole is slowly shrinking, only seems thermal when one analyzes it locally. But in this proposal, one assumes or imagines that there could be non-trivial correlations between the early quanta of Hawking radiation and the late quanta of Hawking radiation, so that this state seems thermal, but if looked globally, it corresponds to a pure state. Okay, so the idea is perhaps inspired in what would be the description of a standard hot body. If I heat up a body and I let it cool down in the atmosphere, it would just radiate radiation, which seems thermal if this is radiating slowly. But in reality, I know that the early radiation and the late radiation will have to be correlated because at the end of the day, the state has to be a pure state. This analogy is fine for this kind of systems, but it's highly problematic in this situation because of what we said at the very beginning. So in the context of this causal structure, there are things that fall into this information. There are correlations encoded between the outside and the inside, encoded in this instance of time. That in this scenario, we are essentially saying that information will leak out of from the black hole by some phenomenon that certainly has to violate the standard rules of quantum field theory. So there is something very peculiar happening at the horizon in this proposal, something that is argued to be of quantum gravity origin. So this scenario has been very famous, but it's for the reason I just evoked, it's very strange because it requires violations of standard quantum field theory at scales where we don't expect any important quantum gravity effect to take place. Right? When the black hole is still very large, we are assuming that somehow the information that is supposed to fall into the black hole is leaking out. Fortunately, I find these recent results concerning firewalls by these people here a very nice way to rule out this possibility. In fact, these people show that if one assumes that there are non-trivial correlations between the late and the early radiation, Hawking radiation, then this necessarily implies that the correlations between the pairs created at a given instant of time, B and C, for instance, cannot be correlated as they should be if the state of the field is supposed to look like the vacuum state for freely falling observers crossing the horizon. So if we require non-trivial correlations between late and early radiation so that the state here is pure, or is purified by these correlations, then we should expect deviations from the condition that the state looks like the vacuum for freely falling observers. And even if these deviations are tiny, if we go back to the past, they become huge because of the infinite blue shift around the horizon. And so this leads to divergence of the energy momentum tensor, or the expectation value of the energy momentum tensor, into the problem of that has to the appearance of a fire wall at the black hole horizon in regions, again, where the black hole is large and is supposed to be semi-classical. So, in other words, if we believe that for a very large black hole, freely falling observers shouldn't see anything special when crossing the horizon, then we cannot have correlations between early and late Hawking radiation. And so these type of scenarios for purification are inconsistent. So we must have no correlations. This radiation has to be really uncorrelated. And so the only place where we can try to go and look for the correlations that are responsible for unitary evolution here is the correlations between the pair itself at each pair creation, the particle C that goes to infinity and the particle B here that falls into the singularity. And just a trivial statement, but if one just computes where this pair created here, the pair corresponding to C, falls into the singularity. So at what distance? One can compute the distance at the distance from this point to the horizon, the spatial distance here along an hypothetical Cauchy surface that touches the region where quantum effects become important. Then by a simple calculation in a model for black hole evaporation, namely in a model for this background that one can produce in terms of a Vaidya metric, for instance, one finds that the distance between the point where this pair that carries the correlations that are important to purify the Hawking radiation, the distance between this point and the horizon is huge. Not only that, it just grows when h bar goes to zero. So what I mean is that if we want to understand the problem of the fate of unitarity, we can never trust any calculation that would be perturbative. So this is a genuine non-perturbative effect. We need to talk, if we want to deal with the problem of unitarity, we need to face the issue of the fate of this singularity in non-perturbative terms. So there is some evidence in models, non-perturbative models, that that quantum gravity effects remove the singularity, and that there is a notion of evolution across the singularity, the would-be singularity. The evidence comes from very simple models, like cosmological models, but more recently, there are also models that these people are studying, Jorge Pulling and Rodolfo Gambini are studying, of spherically symmetric quantum gravity, pure gravity, spherically symmetric pure quantum gravity. So they are there are no radiating degrees of freedom in these models, but these models point towards a scenario where things evolve across the singularity, and so that the singularity is not really a limit, a future boundary of space-time, but things can go through. And motivated by this kind of results, people have constructed some models of effective metrics to represent the causal structure of gravitational collapse. And so there are various proposals, and these are most recent proposals of regular effective metrics. One of them is this Planck-Starr proposal, which is an adaptation of Hayward, regular metric for gravitational collapse, and Fireworks metric, in which one has a tunneling from a black hole to a white hole. In both cases, one has an effective metric, and one expects to, because now there are no singularities, these are expected to be good scenarios to study the problem of unitary evolution. But these proposals have problems. And in fact, thanks to the recent work by Matteo, Eugenio, and Tommaso, it seems that they will have to be ruled out by arguments that involve conservation of energy. In other words, if one assumes unitarity across the region where curvature becomes Planckian, if one assumes that one can use the unitary evolution of a test field in these backgrounds all around the space-time, then one sees that one has too much particle creation, that there is a lot of energy produced in this system, more energy than the one that it is available in the background, so more than the ADM energy that one has in the background geometry, which points towards an inconsistency of these backgrounds, or points towards the necessity of modifying these backgrounds to have consistency with conservation of energy. But in particular, a key assumption is unitarity to get to these inconsistencies. So this type of highly time symmetric bounces, that like the one we have in these models, has also another problem, which is related to the previous one, but one in which we don't need to assume unitarity in the region of in the quantum. So in this case, the metric, the shaded region here, is a region where quantum effects, quantum gravity effects, are supposed to be important. And the inconsistencies I referred to before appear when one assumes that one has a standard unitary evolution for quantum fields, for the quantum test field, across this shaded region. And this is the assumption that leads to problems. But there are problems that one can find in these metrics without this assumption as well. So namely, if and the problem, I like to explain the nature of the problem because it points towards the way in which these backgrounds should be perhaps modified. So if one looks at, again, at the spherical collapse that produces a black hole that is asymptotically stationary, if one puts the vacuum here, a vacuum state for a test field, one finds Hawking radiation at future null infinity, as we said before. Conversely, if one puts the vacuum state as a boundary condition here at future null infinity, one finds that such a boundary condition leads to a state inside the space-time, which is not a Hadamard state. It is a state that is that becomes singular at the horizon. The expectation value, in particular, of the energy momentum tensor in such states blow up at the horizon. This is well known. For instance, this is what happens with the Bulwer vacuum in the Schwarzschild geometry. So in fact, this is true for any state with a definite number of particles in the future. Okay? So this background is does not admit this type of boundary conditions. It's only compatible with putting in the vacuum here, but not the other way around. And the reason is always related to this the infinite blue shift close to the horizon. So this is a fact about the Schwarzschild geometry. But this space-time here is isomorphic to Schwarzschild in this region here. So one can actually explicitly compute the expectation value of the energy momentum tensor for a state, for instance, for very similar reasons. If I put a vacuum state at future null infinity in this space-time, and I only use the assumption of unitarity. So I evolve unitarily this state only in the region outside the shaded region where quantum effects are supposed to be important. Namely, I only use unitarity of quantum field theory where I am allowed to do it, namely where the metric is log curvature and I have a good semi-classical description. Then one can still show that such a state will develop a divergent T mu nu at this horizon. Conversely, if I just put the vacuum here, which is this type of physical boundary condition that I would like to have to describe this gravitational collapse that then produces that with a shell that then bounces off to Sky Plus, if I put the physical boundary condition which corresponds to vacuum in the past, I develop a singularity of the energy momentum tensor in along this null future white hole horizon. And this happens very, very quickly in a time. So in fact, the expectation value of T mu nu becomes Planckian in a time delta u here that goes like m times log m over m Planck. So extremely quickly, we produce a singularity of the expectation value of T mu nu. And this is an indication that this type of time symmetric backgrounds are inconsistent with back reaction. So these backgrounds, so the particle creation and in a space-time produced by gravitational collapse wants, prefers points towards a time asymmetric picture in which the past is very different from the future. And so this is the type. So I believe this indicates that, yes, we might have a well-defined evolution of across the would-be singularity in quantum gravity in a global causal structure which looks like this one. But this bounce across the singularity has to be very time asymmetric. The past has to be very different from the future. And if we trust the semi-classical picture, the semi-classical picture that says that the main quantum effect while the is Hawking radiation while the black hole is large, then as seen from infinity, we can argue for this type of picture very easily. So we have a black hole that forms from a gravitational collapse of some matter. We have here the apparent horizon that forms that initially is null at U naught. We have formed a black hole of a given mass, m. Hawking radiation starts to flow to infinity between U0 to U1. When we get to U1, the black hole has shrunk to Planck size, and the semi-classical picture must be abandoned, but most of the mass of the black hole has been radiated away. So which means that from U1 on, we expect the space-time to be basically flat. So this story we are telling from the point of view of infinity is telling us that the space-time has to be very time asymmetric. And of course, we want Hawking radiation, which is completely uncorrelated, to avoid the problems of the firewall. So which means that most of the mass, the initial mass minus the Planck mass, say, it's radiated to scribe plus. When we reach this point, we end up with a thermal state for the radiation. And so if we believe in a unitary evolution of the fundamental quantum gravity theory, there should be something with respect to which the degrees of freedoms in the Hawking radiation are correlated with, so that the full state is pure. Now, the constraints that only a small amount of mass be radiated from here on, namely the energy conservation constraints, tell us that from here on, we can only radiate something of the order of the Planck mass, tell us from the results of these people here that we have to abandon the assumption that there is a unitary evolution of the quantum field theory degrees of freedom across this would be singularity region. Because if we do, their results show that you have too much particle creation in this quantum region. Too much, and you radiate way much more mass than the one that you had initially, than the ADM mass that you have available in this space-time. But so the problem disappears if we assume that at least for the QFT degrees of freedom, there is no unitary evolution across this region where space-time is very quantum. So the information cannot be encoded, the degrees of freedom that purify the Hawking radiation cannot be quantum field theory degrees of freedom. So Hawking radiation has to be correlated with something to be a pure, to have unitary evolution, and the proposal is that this correlation, these degrees of freedoms, are Planckian quantum geometry degrees of freedoms, which entangle with the Hawking radiation and do not carry any significant amount of energy. Okay, so which takes us to the point that was raised by Lee at the beginning. Okay, so if this Hawking quanta here must be correlated with degrees of freedom that the cross-grain observer, an observer which comes with a scale, cannot see when tested the geometry here. A coarse-grain observer would see the geometry would claim the geometry to be flat here, and namely to be a geometry that does not carry any energy or any significant amount of energy. So again, so the idea is represented by this picture. What observers claim to be flat space is a degenerate notion. Flat space is a degenerate notion. The zero energy state contains many possible different excitations of the fundamental space-time. Defects in the weave that are not to which a coarse-grained observer is not sensitive to. So we got to this asymmetric space-time picture by arguing from the point of view of observers at infinity. Of course, one would like to have a local version of this argument, namely, one would like to have a quantum gravity version of the story in which one can explicitly show that indeed one forms by evolving across this would-be singularity, show that the nature of the singularity in quantum gravity of gravitational collapse, it's highly time asymmetric, as expected from the argument constructed from the physics of observers at infinity. Yes.
So usually, you know, there's a relationship. Information is an energy.
Yeah, in quantum field theories, that's the case. When one has a flat background space-time that is non-dynamical, or that is dynamical if you want in general relativity, but in quantum field theory on flat space-time, that's the case. There is a link between energy and information. But the point here is that in a theory where geometry is constructed out of fundamental quantum geometry excitations, following this idea of coarse graining, you can have many degrees of freedoms that do not count in the energy balance. Yes.
Energy. What is information about?
Let me go on. But Lee has another.
Are you saying that the black hole is somehow a machine for converting information in modes of quantum fields, long wavelength, quantum fields, into basically zero energy defects of the space-time generation?
Yes. Yes. I was going to say it explicitly in a moment, but that's.
From that, because of the infinite redshift, that is, the conversion happens in a region where there's a large redshift from there back up to scribe. So locally, it could look like it codes some energy.
To me, the conversion happens because these particles that are correlated with the Hawking radiation must go through this would-be singularity. And in going through this would-be singularity, these degrees of freedom interact with the quantum structure of the space-time, which in standard situations we don't interact with. Right?
Each time the interaction takes place, if it was a normal interaction, you would leave behind a little unit epsilon of energy in the defect that you left behind. And the quanta that got out to infinity would have energy E, which was its original energy when it was falling far from the black hole.
Well, in terms of energy, this particle carries negative, is taking away some energy from the black hole. That is why the black hole, from the point of view of infinity, the bonding mass of the black hole goes down to zero.
Yes, yes.
Yes. Yes.
There is not zero information too.
So that's in a theory where Minkowski is made out of bits of quantum geometry, and where we expect that changing a little bit these bits does not change the statement that we are still dealing with a flat space-time, then you can encode information there without energy cost. But let me go on because we can come back to your point in a moment, because I have some images to that to complete. Yes, you've seen this before, but not everybody has, I think. So we gave a description of why the space-time should look like this from the point of view of infinity. Okay, so if we, the only assumption here is that we trust the semi-classical Hawking radiation while the black hole is large. So, and basically this leads to this time asymmetric picture. And now the question is how we describe this from the local point of view, from the quantum gravity. This is the question for quantum gravity. And of course, I cannot give a precise answer. And this is something that would have to come from a calculation in full-fledged quantum gravity. But I just wanted to, I like this image because sometimes it's very easy to give accounts of phenomena from, in a certain way, and very complicated to account for the very same phenomenon in from a local perspective. One thing is this: if we look at, so people realize that, I mean, if you look at the ship propagating in a lake, then it produces waves, and these waves carry energy, and so you know that this ship has to lose a lot of energy to move. In the lake, because at infinity you see all this energy coming to you in terms of waves, so you can minimize the loss, the energy losses, and namely the friction, to go through the lake by a trick that you understand very well from the point of view of infinity. So you put this—I forgot how it's called. This thing now, a bulb in front that produces another wave. Which annihilates which interferes destructively with the wave that the ship generated in the first place. So with this bulb here, you see that the ship goes through the water, but you have eliminated this wave that carries energy out to infinity. And by doing that, the ship loses less energy, and there is effectively less friction to move in the medium. So of course, it's very easy to understand in terms of waves and interference of waves, but this has to have a microscopic account in terms of molecules of water and the interaction with the boundary of the ship. That second explanation is the analog of the local explanation of that we're looking for here. From infinity, it's the argument that the space-time should look like that is very reasonable. Now, this implies this high asymmetry of time evolution across the would-be singularity, and that's the hard question that we, but we expect this high time asymmetry to come out from a calculation in quantum gravity. So this, another way of seeing this time asymmetry is that if I look at the geometry of a space-like slice right there at the moment I enter the would-be singularity region, then it has a huge volume. Again, this estimation of the volume is something you do with some model of black hole evaporation. So this is just a qualitative estimation. You get something that grows very much, and in particular blows up when the Planck length goes to zero. So you have to evolve from a geometry that looks very much like this here in the past. You have this spike with a huge volume, to a geometry in the future where things become flat. They have to become flat because all the Bondi energy has been already radiated. And so you have to evolve from this spiky type of geometry to some flat space-like geometry in the future. And so quantum gravity has to tell you how this actually happens, how this tunneling actually takes place. So this seemed to be this very highly time asymmetric picture seems to be at odds with what people are finding with this shell collapse models, which are non-perturbative quantum gravity models. But as I said, these models are just pure spherically symmetric gravity. So there is no a radiative degree of freedom in these models. And it is precisely the back reaction of the Hawking pairs that fall into the singularity, which are responsible for this high time asymmetry of the space-time. So I expect that if these people manage to include in a non-perturbative fashion spherically symmetric scalar field, for instance, then this seemingly time-symmetric picture will be strongly modified by the interaction with the Hawking quanta. And a little idea of this, or an indication of this, comes from just computing the contribution, the expectation value of T mu nu of the Hawking radiation falling into the black hole. This is something you can do explicitly in two by neglecting back scattering in 2D models, and therefore in 2D models, you find that the energy momentum tensor of as measured by freely the expectation value of the of these components of the energy density measured by freely falling observers here towards the singularity becomes it's negative and it blows up at the singularity, and in a way that shows at least qualitatively or indicates so it becomes more negative as you approach the shell that is responsible for the formation of the black hole. So you get a lot of negative energy accumulating close to the place where the positive energy of the shell crosses, and so this indicates a way in which this back reaction of this Hawking radiation can so to say annihilate the positive energy of the shell and highly modify this picture in which the shell just goes through without any effect. So now I come to something that has to do with the question of Li. Yes, so the idea is that when I create a pair, the particle B is part of Hawking radiation, the particle A falls into the very strong curvature region. It carries negative energy, as seen from infinity. That's the reason why the Bondi energy is positive, and the energy flux at infinity is positive, and the Bondi energy is going down. So this particle falls into the singularity, and here it gets the strong quantum gravity regime, interacts with the fundamental degrees of freedom, and is stripped off its energy content. It has to be like that. That is the image we get from this description from infinity. So there are correlations between A and B. These correlations remain. There is a unitary evolution in the fundamental theory that involves the degrees of freedom of quantum gravity. But once these degrees of freedom emerge by time evolution on the other side, they are converted into something else, something that I call here A bar, that does not carry any energy. So this has to be a defect in our space-time weave. It has to be one of these degrees of freedoms that are to which coarse grain observers are not sensitive to. So what are the candidates of these carriers of information? So the point of the following slides is to just try to argue that there is a lot of structures in loop quantum gravity, and I think this can be generalized to other approaches in which space-time is fundamentally discrete at Planck scale, in terms of which these non-energy carrying degrees of freedom could be constructed. Particularly in loop quantum gravity, we have all this, we have at the fundamental level, geometry is completely degenerate. We know there are these solutions of the Hamiltonian constraint, for instance, that do not have any semi-classical geometric interpretation, like these loops and many other types of degenerate geometries that could remain in a space-time weave that approximates flat space-time without affecting, remain as defects which are not detectable by coarse-grain observers. Another possibility that I like to emphasize, yes.
The
Yeah, loops without intersections, but there are many other things that are that represent the generic geometries. That's sort of the most obvious example.
Geometries and it can be conserved. That is, you can have what's called a protected channel or a conserved channel.
That's very interesting. I didn't know that.
And then she hypothesized that they were particles.
Yeah,
because there are quantum numbers that arise from such protected quantum information. I think it's protected. There's a name for them, protected channels or something like that.
Okay, so I have to look at that. But another example that I like very much is the following. In quantum geometry, states of the geometry of space are given by spin networks whose edges carry quanta of area and whose nodes carry quanta of, are labeled by intertwiners. But instead of labeling things with intertwiners, one can label nodes in terms of volume eigenvalues. And if one does so, one finds that the volume operator has a twofold degeneracy. So for each non-zero volume eigenvalue, you have a two-dimensional Hilbert space. You have a qubit for each volume, non-zero volume eigenvalue. So if you interpret this as a geometry, it means that, so if you typically one sees this as representing a quantum geometry in which you have chunks, so an eigenstate of the geometry of the space, in which you have chunks of volume eigenvalues connected to each other by eigenvalues of area that tell you what is the area of the interface between these chunks of volume. But there is something more, something that is not encoded in the geometry of the state. You could say that the geometry of the state is completely determined by the areas and the volumes. But in addition to that, you need the orientation. So this degree of freedom has to do with orientation. But that does not affect metric degrees of freedom. So if you because metric is quadratic in terms of a triad, and so this orientation does not affect the metric degrees of freedom. Exactly. So you want this to be affected by something because you want to be able to interact with this, right? You want to be able to correlate with this kind of degrees of freedom through interactions that happen at the would-be singularity. So you don't want this to be completely unrelated, uninteracting, invisible. Otherwise, it would be just a gauge degree of freedom. So this is telling us that at each volume piece of quantum geometry, we have a qubit that we expect not to affect the semi-classical geometry, but has the potentiality of encoding information. And this is true for the various versions of the volume operator that people have formulated. So this is always there. It has to do with the orientation, as Laurent is saying. And it affects fermions. So there are some calculations done in some classical models. So one can model this classically by looking at a geometry or a triad or a tetrad geometry, if one talks about four-dimensional geometry, in which this triad becomes degenerate at some boundary, and across the boundary, the orientation of the tetrad is flipped, and one can see that fermions do actually interact with these kind of things. And we are trying to look into more details to this type of sort of classical toy models of this degree of freedom to see if we can say more. Any particle with half spin with firm? No.
Yeah.
No. Electromagnetic radiation will not see this. Because you
plane, or let's say spin two, you know, if one spin is along the plane, the other is versus, I don't know, I'm not sure. Like, as soon as you have a more...
There has to be something that interacts with the tetrad and not with the metric. So if you have a field whose equations of motion can be written in terms of the metric, then you don't see this. So of course the question is how much of this remains survives when physical states are constructed, and a related question is what about Lorentz invariance? We know that all this this interpretation in terms of this quantum geometry interpretation is to be taken with care because we expect the continuum limit to be Lorentz invariant, and Lorentz invariance is something we expect to recover in a more subtle way once we understand better how to deal with Hamiltonian constraint and physical states. But I wanted to show this as examples of structures in terms of which perhaps information can be codified. So these are degrees of freedoms that in principle do not affect that seem not to affect the semi-classical geometry that one would construct out of these fundamental states, but that then can carry information. Now, so we've seen that we can have 1 bit per volume eigenvalue. So one could estimate, so this implies that one has a huge information capacity in the geometry states. In particular, if we wanted to purify Hawking radiation, we would need to encode this, we would need this much volume. So namely, we would need the black hole entropy, the initial black hole entropy number of bits to be able to encode all the correlations that will purify the Hawking radiation. And so you can do a simple calculation, and this leads you to a scale of this event here, which corresponds to this would-be singularity region that is seen from, that is visible from Scribe Plus. So in fact, the would-be singularity becomes something like a naked singularity that has a certain, that will have certain geometric properties to be determined from the full theory, but we can estimate its minimum size, namely the minimum size, minimum volume of this surface here, which corresponds to the boundary of the would-be singularity region with the region of space-time, where space-time becomes semi-classical again. So that volume will have to be sufficiently large if information is encoded in this volume bits to encode, to purify Hawking radiation. And this leads to a scale L, V to the volume to the 1/3, that goes like this in terms of the initial mass of the black hole divided by the mass in solar masses. So one sees that, of course, the size of this naked singularity, or would-be naked singularity, depends on the history of the black hole. So the amount of information that is inside the black hole can be much larger than this, because the black hole, the information that contains inside depends on the history of the formation of this black hole. But in order to purify the Hawking radiation, then would-be singularity of a size of the order of this, which for a black hole of the masses that we expect to be, I mean, if we consider primordial black holes of masses that correspond to those that would be becoming visible today, this leads to a very tiny event of 10 to the minus 2 times the scale that is accessible today in LHC.
You haven't talked about how you imagine the process of re-becoming classical.
What I'm thinking of is that if dE over dS in your case is zero, and dE because you have lots of entropy and no energy. So it means that whatever this object is, it's very cold. It's frozen, ultra cold, and therefore it means that the way it's going to thermalize or whatever evolve has to be very, very, very long time, right? Because it has no, it has very.
Well, we are really out of equilibrium here, right? In this.
I think you're more frozen than out of equilibrium. If you're telling me that, you're telling me D, you're really telling me that E over DS is zero, right? You vary, there's lots of entropy with zero.
Yeah, but that expression is something you're allowed to use in equilibrium situations.
It's just, it's a very general. That's what
let's say that we are at zero temperature. So, but that's the point. We are saying that somehow in quantum, if all this would make sense, then we will be will have a huge degeneracy of the ground state, which leads to non-zero entropy at zero temperature.
Then the question is, okay, that's very good. So I have this quantum region, but I would then expect this quantum region to just stay on almost forever. So you need a mechanism. So
yeah, of course. This is the local description of this time asymmetric phenomenon. But we expect this to be.
You expect to become classical again. That's what I'm asking. What is this? So this sounds like a mystery to me. Suppose you go through this deeply quantum. What makes it classical again?
It's a story told from the point of view of infinity. So we have a semi-classical geometry. The space-time is asymptotically flat. We just get a flux.
That. I know you need that. From the point of view of infinity, you need the guy. But now, if I'm on a slice, I'm asking.
Yeah.
At some point, you have a deep quantum regime, and in some sense, it's at zero temperature. So. I don't know. I don't expect to thermalize. You need a mechanism to make it re-thermalize again, or lose its quantumness.
Why do you want it to thermalize?
I mean, the process.
A semi-classical geometry, I see it as a zero.
But I mean, the process that take a very quantum state and make it look classical.
I don't think I can answer that question, but it's certainly.
Somehow makes this coherence that loses its coherence, if you want. Right? The decoherence process that doesn't involve any energy.
Let me ask a question a different way. Why doesn't this happen everywhere? I mean, why isn't this just a disaster for the quantum gravity? Why is it just everywhere the lots of information is disappearing?
Yeah, because we are not. Because the point is that only when you go through a regime where you interact with a high curvature regime, only when you go through a singularity, you get to interact with this Planckian degrees of freedom.
But that's words.
So it's like when we burn something. So we can read the paper as far as we don't light up any cigarette on the newspaper, we're fine. But if we set the paper in fire, then we will just degrade the information in the paper.
Laurent is asking.
I'm fine with that.
Those are words. Yeah. There has to be a physical mechanism that turns on proportional to the curvature, and you haven't shown us that.
No, I haven't shown that at all. Yeah, I am not able to show that. But there is the expectation that at low energies, this underlying otherwise quantum gravity would not make any sense. At low energies, we must have Lorentz invariance, and we must have be able to describe physics in terms of effective quantum fields on a fixed background. And So I guess one will have to show that the decoherence with this Planckian degrees of freedom is nearly zero, but it's very tiny when the curvature of this space-time is low. That's the point. So that you only get access to, you get to interact with this Planckian structure when the curvature of the space-time is Planckian. So in particular, one could try to do...
You mean the reverse, decoherence is very low when curvature is very high. You want to see the quantumness when curvature is very high.
Decoherence is very high when the...
I see a classical space-time. I don't see...
But I mean decoherence in the sense that quantum field theory degrees of freedoms are trade with degrees of freedoms, Planckian degrees of freedoms, those that are hidden degrees of freedoms for QFT type of...
That's anti-decoherence. It means it becomes more and more quantum.
Your space-time, right? QFT.
I'm talking from the point of space-time.
I'm talking about the coherence in the sense that if
the space-time becomes more and more quantum.
Yeah, right? Space-time becomes more and more quantum, close to the singularity. If you call that... I think we're not agreeing in the language, but only.
Classic, like the phase information is mixed up. Whereas what you want to do is a process that takes a classical object and make it look very like spin, a collection of spin networks. So, you know,
I meant the coherence in the sense that why is it that this state looks thermal and with a lot of entropy? It looks thermal with a lot of entropy when I trace out the fundamental state, when I trace out the correlations, I mean, when I trace out the degrees of freedoms which are Planckian. So the state here is more than just I mean the process in which these defects have been created is been through the evolution across a singularity. So this decoherence.
Defects and saying it's quantum gravity, so I'm okay going through the right region, let's say, and saying it's very quantum, and now these states are like loop quantum gravity states, this plus minus. What I was asking is that because this is quantum gravity, but then what I'm asking is what is the mechanism, given that I have no energy, what is the mechanism that somehow is going to take these very quantum states and make them decohere, that it makes them look to me very flat, very, very semi-classical.
Well, I have said some words about that.
Let me finish, just because the usual, so for that, usually we take decoherence. But decoherence requires lots of energy, exchange of energy between the system and the other. So,
not necessarily. Not necessarily.
Decohere a quantum system? You need to have
I'll show you.
If you have energy,
you can have decoherence without dissipation. That's a result that I was going to quote in a moment but why is it that the space-time becomes classical again? Well, these models are showing evidence for this. Okay, so I have almost finished. So we expect the space-time gravitational collapse to be highly asymmetric. I think this result is very welcome because it tells us that purification cannot take place during the Hawking era, as has been argued for over a long time. Purification via effective quantum field degrees of freedom after the Hawking era seem not possible because of after the Hawking era and in a scenario where one assumes unitarity of the quantum field theory degrees of freedom seems not possible due to energy conservation arguments. So in this context, a natural possibility is that there is no unitarity in the quantum field theory sector. There is unitarity in the fundamental description, and the purification occurs via, if you don't like this word, say via correlations with Planckian quantum geometry structures. And all this, we've seen that somehow, in order to make sense of this argument, one has to assume that bulk geometry contains information. So this sounds a bit orthogonal to the ideas of holography, but I can argue that it's not. In fact, holography, from this point of view, holography or the holographic phenomenology must be seen as property of special systems and not as a fundamental property of the theory. And as property of special systems like null surfaces and horizons of black hole, the picture I'm presenting here is completely consistent. And so the idea of addressing the problem of information in black hole evaporation via degrees of freedoms that do not carry any energy is old. In fact, it was first stated by Unruh and Wall in 1995, and has been recently discussed by Unruh in this paper. And so these are concrete models in which you have a Hamiltonian and degrees of freedoms with respect to which you have decoherence. You have evolution of a pure state into a mixed state with degrees of freedoms that do not participate in the energy balance between past and future. And these are extremely simple models that we can discuss. So these kind of things exist. And they are of a very trivial nature, in fact. But I think I better finish, and then we discuss this in the questions session, because it's late. So to conclude, quantum geometry is expected to be atomistic in non-perturbative quantum gravity. This smooth space-time arises from cross-coarse graining. So this leaves this door open for encoding information in some Planckian defects. These sub-Planckian degrees of freedoms, which are hidden to low energy observers, are the ones that explain the calculation of Hawking entropy. Question number one in the context of loop quantum gravity. So I said this already. So firewalls preclude purification during the Hawking era, and energy conservation precludes the seems to be against the assumption that there is unitarity in a pure quantum field theory, in the purely quantum field theory sector, quantum field theory on curved space-time sector. The natural possibility is that the purification happens through correlations with these defects. The implication of that is that the initial and the final flat space-times are not the same. So an effective quantum field theory scattering approach can never, if this is correct, cannot describe the fundamental physics, cannot answer the question of unitarity. So the type of scenario that we are proposing here is certainly orthogonal to the type of ADS-CFT scenario, where things are described on a boundary at infinity in terms of effective quantum field theories, or in terms of a quantum field theory, a fundamental quantum field theory. And it seems to me that the firewall argument is, my interpretation of the argument, is also an argument against this type of scenarios. And so the present scenario is very much compatible with the view that the black hole formation and subsequent evaporation is a highly irreversible process in which information is not lost, but just degraded into these defects of the Planckian structure. So things that would be nice to do is to include local degrees of freedom in these spherical models and try to see if one can answer the type of question that Laurent was asking. And concerning what Lee was saying, it would be, so there is a lot of work in the context of this type of discrete theories. There was a lot of work in trying to study the deviations from Lorentz invariants that you can get. I think it would be very interesting to try to study in what way this decoherence with this fundamental Planckian degrees of freedoms affects the standard unitary evolution of fields in the flat space-time context. So to what extent we can estimate whether this is a disaster for standard quantum field theory or not, whether in normal situations where we don't go through a black hole singularity, whether the decoherence with the Planckian type of structures that loop quantum gravity or any formulation of in terms of discrete structures, whether this type of decoherence implies a catastrophic effect of loss of losing unitarity in situations where we know that unitarity holds true. So thank you very much. So there's a paper about these things, and I'd like to acknowledge conversations, stimulating conversations with all these people. Thank you. Yes.
What about the Big Bang singularity? Why wouldn't you just produce a bunch of Planckian degree of freedom?
Yeah, I think when we evolve through, so there's evidence that quantum gravity should also resolve the Big Bang singularity. And the question.
There's a balance in all that. The Sampson density of the initial singularity. When you go through that, why don't you dissolve all your degrees of freedom into quantum gravity?
Yeah. If what I'm saying, if one can be more precise about this evolution across the singularity one day, I think we will have to understand this question. What happens with the degrees of freedom? In particular, why is it that the initial state after this Big Bang is so special? Maybe, as we're discussing with Lee, why is it that after this singularity, the space-time is so special in the sense that it satisfies this low entropy feature of being of satisfying the Weyl curvature hypothesis of Penrose, for instance? But so these kind of questions are questions for quantum gravity, and I think are related to what Laurent was saying. Why is it that the space-time becomes flat again on the other side of the singularity? It might be related to.
I'm not interjecting. I was going to say your proposal would be more coherent, and several times you said that the situation has to be time asymmetric. But I think it has to be time asymmetric, and you have to assume that there's a fundamental irreversibility in asymmetry. That is, so that basically your hypothesis is that the quanta that fall in towards the singularity end up as little knots. Let's say that you each one of them ends up in a little knot tied in the fundamental geometry. Those knots, of course, are a disaster for the quantum gravity. We've known about them for a long time. But if the fundamental, because the problem is, if the dynamics is reversible, you can unknot a knot, and then the information goes into some ordinary excitation. But maybe what you need is the possibility that the dynamics is really fundamentally irreversible, and you lose information in this knotting.
Yes.
And it never comes back, because there's no way to read it or decode it. And that's okay, because there's no problem of the gain of information from white hole evaporation. There's no time reversal of the black hole evaporation paradox, because there are no white holes in nature, which again is a puzzle that Roger brought up, and it's related to the Weyl curvature hypothesis. So maybe all
but this isn't, but in this case, the origin of the strong time asymmetry of this space-time boils down to the choice, in my view, of initial conditions, once again. So, Yeah, it might, but the fact that we create here these loops and we don't undo them as time goes on wouldn't be surprising to me because there is something in this solution to the dynamics of the theory, which is time asymmetric by construction. The initial conditions are such that I expect a time asymmetric outcome. I mean, everything could be everything is might be fundamentally time symmetric. So, which would mean that if I turn this around, this should also be an acceptable solution of the quantum theory.
More elegant if you can't turn it around.
Yeah, I understand. I understand that you're pushing for this kind of thing, but
oops.
But here I could turn this around. Let me say, if I turn this around, I would say this is also possible, but it's highly unlikely in the usual sense of the second law of thermodynamics, right? I mean, if I have a bottle of perfume that goes into the air, watching the movie the other way around is also a solution to dynamical equations, but it's very hard to realize in practice. Here too, I will have to send in Hawking radiation, send in all these defects in a precisely correlated way so that I end up in the future with matter and in this special state where nothing.
But I'm more worried about far in the future of this disappeared black hole. Is this a region of space-time with a lot of knots in it?
Mm-hmm.
And at zero energy, according to my model.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a process by which those knots were the result of a quanta which effectively all its energy is sucked out by the thing that it was correlated with, the other quanta.
Mm-hmm.
Then if there's a time reversal of that process in your theory, then I worry that would violate the laws of thermodynamics, I guess is what I'm
saying. I think it's related. I mean, there is a possibility. I think it all boils down to me to what happened after, let's say, you create these knots in this quantum.
So if I create these knots that I created here, they are strongly correlated with the Hawking radiation. So their dynamics to the future is not free. It depends on by unitarity. It depends on my initial conditions, which highly strongly violate this time, which contain this time arrow. So I don't.
Let's forget about. I mean, let me formulate the puzzle. And you told me there's a resolution that I want to talk about. The puzzle I have is that you're telling me you need. Essentially, you have a system at zero temperature that you need to decode. So you want, in order for this scenario to apply, you have to have decoherence at zero temperature. So naively, you know, I would think, well, at zero temperature in a normal system,
I have a system at zero temperature that I need to become semi-classical.
You agree that this system is purely quantum when it goes with that. That's your mechanism.
I need to become semi-classical, right? That's.
It's purely quantum. It's this knotted region. It's this pinform region. Whatever is the quantumness of the stuff.
I need it to become semi-classical, but
yes.
I wouldn't use the term decoherence because it doesn't decohere.
That's what it means physically. Right.
Decoherence is where there are other degrees of freedom that you ignore.
No,
and so
you can need dephasing. No, you can need dephasing. You need some process that takes a system at zero temperature and a system which is fundamentally quantum and makes it look classical.
Mm-hmm.
So let's call that decoherence. You know, dephasing, whatever it is. So usually the naive expectation is that H equal to zero means I have only a few states and therefore it's not possible. That's why I was, you know, when you're telling me decoherence at zero temperature now, it's okay, you may tell me, so the only option, which is in fact it's consistent with your story, is to say I am at H equal to zero, but the vacuum has an infinite number of states, and then I have a mechanism for decoherence.
Mm-hmm.
And we can chat maybe about this mechanism after. I think it's a deeper question, it cannot be solved to me. I mean, decoherence at zero temperature, I think I've been, you know, it's a question that may have been looked at in the literature, in That's essentially
but
the question.
But the coherence with degrees of freedom that do not carry energy is some standard thing.
No, okay. I think it's more general. People have looked at that, and it's maybe a possibility that decoherence at zero temperature could exist in certain systems. I think this is what my question about thermodynamics. And I'm not saying it's not true. I'm just saying, you know.
I have a more simple worry or confusion. Mm-hmm. If you have a process which takes zero energy, which knots a link in space-time, and it takes zero energy, mm-hmm. and your quantum gravity theory is time reversible, then there's a process that takes zero energy which unknots it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the unitarity will prevent this because this knot is correlated with something. So unitarity.
It forgets the correlation. That's why Laurent is.
I cannot forget the correlation.
It's correlated with something very far away, space-like to it. Its correlation plays no role. It's basically.
But it plays a role in the unitary evolution, right? If I have an EPR pair, the Hamiltonian tells me.
Which will unknot it and release a quantum will release a bit of information or a few information to something which takes zero energy. But that
and what is that something?
Anything, because it takes
that
zero energy.
That something would have to be, again, one of these defects, because it has to be something.
No,
that
it doesn't. If there's a process that takes an ordinary quanta and converts that quanta into a defect at zero energy, then if your theory is time reversible, there's a process that undoes that. And creates a very long wavelength.
Yeah,
so I put in a tiny bit of energy.
But
I
in the same way,
burning
a newspaper, the process that turns letters into smoke, and there is a process that takes smoke into letters. But
look, when you talk about the burning, we're not talking about the burning process, right? The process that go you through the singularity. We're talking about the process after.
Yes, but I'm saying there is an implicit arrow of time in a process that comes from the boundary conditions.
It's okay. You're focusing, I think your discussion focuses on before.
And all the time.
And well, before and after is different process. The before is a burning process, the after process is a more mysterious process.
Yeah, I think
process.
We should.
Anyway,
I think Lee wants to time reverse the after process, which is interesting.
Well, I want an argument that quantum gravity can't be time reversible, which I would love for my own reasons.
Yes, I know. But we should discuss more. I don't see the necessity of it in this context. But I might not be.
Yep, come to me.
Yeah, much related with Lee's previous question. So it seems that it's possible to engineer a process that at the beginning, like initial state, the space-time degree of freedom, the mutual information between space-time degree of freedom and matter degree of freedom decrease with time. Like in quantum mechanics, we can engineer this kind of process. Then is that true that for an observer that only measure the matter part, you will see something like a violation of second law or something. It's like the correlation between space-time and the matter decreases with time. And so at the beginning, the matter is very thermal. It goes with time, it becomes less and less thermal for this observer who only measures the matter.
I understand the thing in the opposite direction. So the correlations between matter and quantum geometry degrees of freedom increases with time here.
Yeah. I mean, if we can engineer a reverse.
Ah, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Then you would be violating the second law of thermodynamics. Yes.
Yeah, but it seems that in quantum mechanics, we can easily use a unitary operator to make this happen.
We can't violate the second law of thermodynamics. Second law of thermodynamics is not the fundamental. So
there will observe violation of second law. Yes, if we can engineer a reverse process.
Yes, of course. I agree. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Alejandro.